on 88.3 Southern FM. Coming up now, we're going to have the space show. This evening, we're going to dispense with our usual theme and instead use some of the music composed for the first landing on a comet by our usual theme artist, though, Vangelis. But first, let's give you a little teaser for what's going to come in the show this evening.
We definitely confirmed that the lander is on the surface, and I leave it to Stefan. I think it's up to him to judge how it's going now on the lander.
Okay, so we are there, and Phila is talking to us. First things he told us was that the harpoons have been fired, rewound, and the landing gear has been moved inside, so we are sitting on the surface. Phila is talking to us, more data to come and to be analyzed right now.
Wonderful music there. That was composed by Vangelis, especially for the European Space Agency, and it was called Arrival. And, well, we'll play that music again, no doubt, in the future sometime. Well, welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie, and on this evening's The Space Show, well, what else can we talk about but Rosetta and Phila? Oh, dear. So we're calling this program Phila, the Ecstasy and the Agony. Well, we'll tell you all during this show as to what's happened and the status of Phila as it is known at the moment. So we go into Space Show News. When we left you last week, the Phila had just separated from the Rosetta spacecraft, Rosetta in orbit around the comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. Well, the landing went down on as scheduled. Phila descended after we left you at 8 o'clock last Wednesday, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, just a few minutes after 3, we heard that it had touched down, and we paid you a little clip of that. Well, yeah, there's a bit more to the story than that, so we'll catch you up on that during the show. Well, the ice screws did not work, as the first 25 centimetres of the comet's surface was dust. The cold gas thruster system did not work, as the valve did not open. And it was thought before separation that the valve wouldn't open, but they weren't sure at that time whether it was a sensor problem or the valve was actually stuck. Well, after 10 years in space, it had stuck. And what's worse, the harpoons did not fire. So, of all the four lander systems, only one worked, and that was the lander energy absorption system on the legs did work, and that limited the rebound. Well, the first touchdown was at 16:03 Universal Time. That's at 3:03 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. That's the Earth receive time. The light travel time between the comet and Earth is about 28 minutes or so. Now, Rosetta, at the moment, is working nominally. That means normal. Everything's okay on Rosetta. There's not a problem there. But Philae, as we said, it bounced twice. Now, the first touchdown occurred at 15:34 Universal Time, and that was the real time, and we've got to add to that the transit time. And then it bounced off. And it, as far as we can work out, it went up to about 450 metres high, and for 111 minutes was spaceborne again. I can't say airborne because there's no air around the comet. And the second touchdown happened at 17:25 Universal Time, and then it bounced again. Oh, dear. And it made a third touchdown at 17:32 Universal Time. So the first flight down was about 7 hours. Then the first bounce lasted 111 minutes. That's about 1 hour and 51 minutes. And then the second bounce lasted 7 minutes, and that bounce went up to 3 metres high. And then it settled. Now, it's not known exactly where it is. They still don't know exactly where Philae has landed. We know certainly for sure where it first hit the ground, but the second and third touchdowns we're not sure of. But it's thought to be near the site known previously as Site B. Remember, the thing was aiming for a site called J originally and named in a naming competition Adjokia, which is the island on which the Philae monuments are now located in the Nile River. The computer memory on Philae worked properly. And during the first bounce, Philae rotated, as indicated by the ROMAP instrument. That's a magnetometer that detects the magnetic field. And it showed that the spacecraft was rotating slightly. And one of the reasons it did that was that the stabilization, the gyroscopes inside, were switched off at touchdown, as you'd expect. And so when it bounced, it wasn't gyroscopically stabilized. And it's a miracle it actually landed back on its feet the second time. Now, the main solar panel, in the position it is now, is in the shadow of a cliff. But panel 2 did get some sunlight, and it was getting about 1.5 hours of sunlight a day. Now, on November the 15th, Philae lifted itself up a little on its legs. It didn't lift off, it just lifted up on its legs and rotated 35 degrees. That was in the hope of putting the solar panel more into the sun. Now, the drill was initially reported to have gone all the way down and then was fully retracted. However, it's not sure exactly what it went into. The MUPUS instrument hammered the penetrator into the ground but did not break through the crust. So the crust must be able to bear more than 2 megapascals of pressure. And it was decided not to fire the harpoons to try and reposition the lander because it was thought that might knock the lander over and make matters worse rather than better. So Philae is probably lying sideways, resting on 2 feet and the body, with a third foot pointing upwards off the ground. Most experiments on Philae, however, did work, and the batteries ran flat after 60 hours when the voltage fell below 21.5 volts. So it worked for 60 hours, and there's a possibility that when it comes back into sunshine again, it may get some more battery charging, but they're not sure. Now, during the first 1 hour, 50-minute bounce, Philae travelled about 1 kilometre, horizontally, at a speed of about 38 centimetres per second. During the 7-minute second bounce, Philae travelled at around about 3 centimetres per second. The first touchdown triggered the post-landing sequence of experiments. So the experiments thought, oh, goody, we're on the ground, and they started working. Before falling silent, Philae was able to transmit all science data gathered during the first science sequence, and no further contact has been possible unless sufficient sunlight falls on the solar panels to generate enough power to wake it up. So maybe we have heard of Philae the last of it, or we might just hear from it again, depending on how the sunlight goes. Now, on Friday, the European Space Agency published images that showed the shadow of the dust cloud kicked up when Philae made its first touchdown. Those photographs were taken from the Rosetta spacecraft. Now, further examination of the pictures from NavCam, that's one of the cameras on board Rosetta, revealed that they also showed Philae and its shadow just after the bounce. The presence of Philae in the images was pointed out by members of the public. As ESA first published them without realising that they actually had pictures of Philae in the frame. Now, the MPUS Hammer did not progress more than a few millimetres, even at the highest power setting. Now, preliminary assessment is that the surface consists of dust of 10 to 20 centimetres thickness. This overlays mechanically strong ice or ice and dust mixtures. And they know that at greater depths, the ice becomes more porous because of the overall density of the comet is less than that of solid ice. Now, on November 17, the European Space Agency published a series of images by Rosetta's OSIRIS camera, that's the high-resolution camera, and this showed Philae drifting across the face of the comet before touchdown and during the first bounce. The images were taken from a distance of 15.5 kilometres. The images confirm that at the first touchdown, Philae was moving eastward at a speed of half a metre per second. The final resting place appears to be on the back of the neck of the comet. As I said, they're not sure just where it is. Some people say it's on the rim of the crater formerly known as Site B. Now, this neck, if it is there, joins the two lobes. The European Space Agency still has not definitely located Philae. And just a reminder, the original site was called Ajorkia, but some people have been joking, well, since it touched down in two other places, maybe we need two more names for the landing sites. Well, we are going to come back in a moment with a documentary feature about the last week with Philae and Rosetta.
Today's community news makes conversation the great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
Rosetta, now it's time to rise. It's your time to shine and come back to life. So wake up, sleeping satellite. Wake up, Rosetta.
When we left you last Wednesday at about 8:05, we had confirmation that Philae had separated from Rosetta. And we're going to take the story from that point onwards and right up to the present time. So we had the pre-event or pre-separation event summary. And at that time, notice, listen out here for the mention of the problem with the cold gas system.
A while ago, we passed the first hurdle, we got the first go-ahead with the landing sequence. The
spacecraft is very healthy, and we have had just right now a go from the flight control team and from Flight Dynamics. Great news, we are a go from the lander. It's 3:30 local Darmstadt time. We needed a bit more time to do all the final checks, but everything's okay. The commands have already been sent to give the go on board. And so the next big steps now is the maneuver, which will start around 7:30 local Darmstadt time here, and then the final go, no go an hour later.
Actually, this night was quite busy for us here in the control room, also for the team in the lander control center in DLR. So we had to repeat some activities there, and we indeed do have a problem with the cold gas system aboard the lander. But everything else is nominal now, and we are on go, and indeed separation will take place in about 2.5 hours from now.
We switch on our first instrument, ROMAP. Since a couple of hours, is already collecting data on the magnetic field of the comet, and soon, in something like half an hour, we have to switch on other instruments like MUPUS and SESAME, instruments to characterize the properties of the cometary surface and subsurface.
Great news from the main control room. Flight Dynamics told us the maneuver performed very well. We're go for lander delivery. So we've also just sent the commands, and they're on their way to the spacecraft. The spacecraft is now slewing to the separation altitude, so we have LOS. We've lost telemetry, which is fully nominal, and now we just have to wait for separation.
And we also had, in that before the separation, an indication that the cold gas system wasn't going to work. Now, that's the thruster on the top of the spacecraft. It was supposed to hold it on the ground while the ice screws worked and the harpoons were fired to hold it on the ground. But, well, it's one of a series of things that went wrong.
And we go straight over to Koen Kurtz at the Lander Operations Center in Cologne. I believe we're there right now and see the main control room there. Koen should be visible any moment, and here he is standing outside the main control room. So you're the lander technical manager at DLR, and you performed a number of tests and simulations with the lander to be sure that the landing will actually work in the moment of touchdown. What exactly have you done?
That's correct. We've been conducting many tests over the last 3 years, in particular during the Rosetta hibernation phase, in order to prepare not only for the separation, descent and landing that we're conducting today, but also for the associated science phase that we conduct immediately starting from touchdown, which will last about 48 hours. And afterwards, we have hopefully a very long-term science phase that we've prepared as well.
And, well, it sounds like everything is going to work, though we heard earlier that there were some complicated moments. Are you confident that we'll go ahead with it all?
Yeah, of course. I'm very confident. We had some hiccups last night. It was a very short night for myself, but this is what we've been training for all these years. We've prepared contingency procedures. For example, when we saw that the ADS tank opening did not succeed, we already had contingency procedures prepared, agreed with our colleagues at RMOC, so we could rerun them in a short time. This is exactly the things that that we have been training for all these years.
Okay, well, Koen Kurtz, best of luck. Obviously, we'll all cross our fingers for you. Thank you very much for now. I'm hearing that we are really only moments away, hopefully, from one of the crucial moments of this morning, the separation of the Philae lander from the orbiter Rosetta. You are watching a live coverage of the hopefully successful landing, the first ever landing of a man-made probe on a comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. And now would be a good time for us to cross over to the main control room at the European Space Operations Center to watch as things unfold.
And you heard it there? The signal's in. Looks like Philae has separated. Smiles everywhere. Huge audience in the outside the control room and watching this event. But with that news that Philae appears to have separated, we haven't got the official announcement yet, but certainly the cheers came in. We better hand over to Mark Norman and Purple Haze. I'm Andrew Rennie, the space show on air next Wednesday at the usual time of 7 o'clock.
Okay, Andrea, I'll keep asking. We want to hear it from your lips. We have the signal. The separation worked out. It functioned.
Definitely. We've been living and flying together for 10 years. Now Phil has gone. It's on its path down to the comet. Definitely. We see it in telemetry.
Fantastic, Andrea. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. It goes to the large team that we are here. We spent the night trying to recover the lander completely, and this was successful. We are all glad that it worked flawlessly in the last minutes.
Yeah. Well, we're all nervous. We all have sweaty hands, Andrea. I know that there's still many more crucial moments, the most crucial one in a few hours from now, the actual landing, but we've taken the first hurdle. I was wondering what happened to Stefan Ulametz, the Philae lander manager, who obviously was very nervous, and he's next to you.
He cannot hear me, can he? Yes, I can. In the meantime, I can hear you again.
Yep. You can hear me. Fantastic. Yes. Yeah. So, after so many years, and especially after such a stressful night, how do you feel right now?
Well, released or relieved. So, we were together for 10 years. It's time to separate, and we successfully separated now. So the lander is alone, it's on its own now. It's due to gravity to bring it down in about 7 hours from now, or 6.5, on ground for the landing.
Okay, well, and we'll be, of course, there, and you'll keep an eye on the telemetry, the data that tells you about everything that happens in the meantime. Just briefly, what's happening in the next few hours before we will catch up with you?
Yeah, so in about 2 hours, we should get a radio link from the lander while it's still descending. So we will get first data, housekeeping, but also some signs data soon also. So maybe this farewell image of the orbiter. So part of this can be transmitted already during descent. But then, of course, at touchdown itself, we should see the touchdown signal, the harpoon firing signal, and then the real science will start on the surface.
Okay, Stefan Ulametz, I let you take a deep breath now, relax a bit before the next bit of work. Thank you very much, and congratulations for getting this far.
Thank you.
I'm back here again with Mark McCochran, of course, the senior advisor to European Space Agency's Science and Robotic.
Well, let me say one thing while we're waiting here. You know, what's amazing about what we've just done is we've given up the careful control we've had over this spacecraft for years and years and years. It's all down to Isaac Newton now. It's down to the laws of physics. We're on the way to the surface. Our hands are, we're off the spacecraft, but, you know, that's where the tension really begins. So if Isaac's friendly to us, we'll have a great landing later on today.
All right. You trust in Isaac Newton, I hope.
The next important event during that 7-hour descent was to establish contact between Philae and Rosetta, because Philae was unable, didn't have enough powerful enough transmitter to send its information direct to Earth, so it had to relay it through Rosetta. Now, if they didn't establish the link with Rosetta, then the mission, well, Rosetta would continue, but Philae's mission might well have landed successfully and done its thing, but we wouldn't have known about it.
The signal from Rosetta was acquired earlier on, and now Rosetta has confirmed that Rosetta is receiving signal from the lander. We can see the telemetry from the lander on our displays. We have an end-to-end link established. That's exactly what we wanted.
I think they should be standing by in the main control room now to give us, here he is, Andrea Accomazzo. Oh, I can see that you've had some sleepless nights there, Andrea.
Tell me. I didn't sleep very long last night. But once in your life, you can do it. It's a good reason today.
But exactly. It's worth it. We're about an hour before landing. Do give us a short update.
Well, we keep receiving telemetry both from the lander and from Rosetta, of course. We have just done a station handover. We have switched the telemetry reception and the telecommands from our station in Australia to the one in Argentina. And we have just received the confirmation as well from the flight dynamics team that the lander appears to be properly positioned in the OSIRIS images. So we see the lander going down on the right track.
That's fantastic news,
indeed,
Andrea.
Indeed.
That makes us feel really good at this moment, yes.
And then just after 3 o'clock last Thursday morning, Australian Eastern Daylight Time, we had this premature report of a successful touchdown.
We definitely confirmed that the lander is on the surface, and I leave it to Stefan. I think it's up to him to judge how it's going now on the lander.
Okay, so we are there, and Philae is talking to us. First things he told us was that the harpoons have been fired, rewound, and the landing gear has been moved inside, so we are sitting on the surface. Philae is talking to us, more data to come and to be analyzed right now.
And in the light of that, the the brass that were there, the officials, made their congratulations speeches. They broke out the champagne, and they all thought everything was going to be hokey-dory. But we'd found out later that that wasn't the case.
I would like to have a special word for the best drivers of the world.
And we now go to the moment when the signal of the first touchdown arrived.
We can't be happier than what we are now. We definitely confirmed that the lander is on the surface, and I leave it to Stefan. I think it's up to him to judge how it's going now on the lander.
Okay, so we are there, and Phila is talking to us. First things he told us was that the harpoons have been fired, rewound, and the landing gear has been moved inside, so we are sitting on the surface. Phila is talking to us. More data to come and to be analyzed right now. The flywheel is going down, which it should do, of course. We are there. It's done its job. We are on the comet.
Well, those celebrations were somewhat premature because the Philae, as we said, had bounced off and was now on a 1 hour, 50-minute flight to further along the comet. Anyway, we now go to the Philae Control Centre, where we find out a bit more about what actually has happened.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you just have a few more minutes, because before we can open the champagne, I think it would be very kind towards Philae if we just one more time make sure it's okay. And for that, we cross over to the Lander Control Centre in Cologne, where Koen Gertz is standing by. Koen, how is Philae doing?
Hello. Well, Philae is doing great. We've seen a touchdown signal. This means that we landed on the comet, or we touched the surface. We saw that the damping length, so to absorb the impact, decreased with 4 centimeters. This is much less than we were expecting. This could indicate that the comet or the landing was very soft, very gentle. What we can also confirm is that the ADS, so the tank opening that failed yesterday, was indeed a tank opening failure, not a sensor problem, because it did not ignite. What we also see from our telemetry is that the anchors did not shoot. And this is causing us some concerns at the moment, because without this anchoring, we cannot with 100% certainty state that we are landed on the comet and that we are fixed on the comet. So from a software point of view, from sequencing, we see that everything is proceeding normally. But our big concern is at the moment if we can in some way confirm that we're also standing stably on the comet and will remain there. And we are considering if we need to retry shooting the anchors. So well, this is the current situation.
Koen, thank you very much for this update. Good to know that Philae had a soft landing, and I'm sure that Philae will make the most of the time it's got on that comet. In the meantime, best of luck with the anchors. Koen Gertz in Cologne at the LCC. And ladies and gentlemen, I would like the last person to ask Thomas Reiter to join me on stage right now, the head of ESOC and Director of Human Spaceflight Operations here at ESA, because there are only three things to say. Philae's landed, Philae is alive. In 1 hour from now, after 22 hours of live coverage, we still don't give up, and we hope you don't either, because that's when we expect the first pictures taken by Fila from the landing site, something we definitely do not want to miss. And I'm sure I leave it to you to invite everyone to have a nice glass of champagne after your speech.
With great pleasure. Thank you, Monica. It's been really an exciting afternoon. So the only thing which is left to say is please follow me to take a toast to all those who have contributed and cheer for this success today. Thank you for being with us. I think today we have written a little bit of history in spaceflight. Thank you.
So they read off and had their champagne and all that sort of thing, believing that things were all hokey-dory. But as it turned out, things were not, and we have the story of that coming up after these messages.
Lullabies aren't the only thing you need to know to put a baby to sleep. You also need to know how to create a safe sleeping environment for your baby and reduce the risk of SIDS. Always sleep your baby on their back from birth. Make sure their face is uncovered during sleep and keep them free from cigarette smoke before birth and after. For more information, ask your child health nurse for a free SIDS and Kids Safe Sleeping brochure or call SIDS and Kids on 1300 308 307.
Well, you are listening to The Space Show, and we are now going to bring us up to Thursday, and there was a briefing on Thursday morning, that's sort of going Friday morning our time, at the European Space Agency, in which they explained what happened. By that time, they'd figured out a bit of what was going on with Philae.
Well, you know, exploration is that sort of venture that happens only once in one's life. And when you're in the process, you don't have necessarily the prospect to see where we are, like revolution. I think we're really in a core revolution with what we are doing here. As we said yesterday, yes, we wanted to land. We landed. Then we rebounced. Even more than what we thought yesterday, actually. From the science data we collected up to yesterday evening, we understood that we had three flops like that. And finally, we rebounced two times and finally stopped in a place where we are not entirely located, but we sort of get close to the place where we are, where we think we are, which is not very close to the one we wanted to, but not very far away. We thought that, you know, when we discussed the landing site, we had to choose one, and we finally decided to explore several. That's what we did during this mission. We explored several missions, several sites. Around the B site, we show the G site and the J site, and now we are sort of on the other side of the B site, probably. And that's a result of the brilliant science reduction of several instruments, in particular the concert instrument, that after an entire 10 hours of integration has been able to do two things important. One is to probably locate us on the planet, on the comet, I'm sorry. I'm just tired because in 2 nights without sleeping, it's a little tiring. And the other thing CONCERT has been doing, which is absolutely brilliant also, they have completed their first crossover of the entire planet, the tomography, and so probably in the coming hours we'll have an idea whether this structure exists in both lobes, in one lobe. We will know that rapidly, I guess. So it's really a very good success on that side. Many of the other instruments have already acquired what they wanted to. The ROMAP instrument have acquired the magnetic field around, and they will soon also release some important data on whether or not this material was magnetized or not. And we have this HOLIS imaging that could make some images just below the place where we landed a few hours ago, actually this morning.
We're listening to Jean-Pierre Bybring discussing the status of the Philae lander on the comet.
So when you put all that together, this is a sort of panorama. If you were to sit on the lander, turning around, that's essentially what you would see. And to give you an idea of the way we think we are located, so open sky is upwards, and that's where we would be now. And so we consider that that gives you an idea of the travel we had and the way we landed finally. We're almost vertical, 1 foot probably in the open air, open space, I'm sorry, there is no air around, open space, 2 feet still on the surface, but you can imagine the sort of gentle maneuver that we are supposed to do now to maintain the strategy and the position of our lander there. So essentially we already accepted ideas on what to do next, but we will do that in the next hours and possibly days. We will try to optimize the illumination because we still have possibility to maneuver things that might, by reaction, modify the orientation of our lander. So possibly for the next panorama when we'll show that up, you will see that we are no longer in that orientation because we might try to better orientate the solar panels vis-à-vis the sun. And meanwhile, we'll have operated part of the other instrument that required to be operated, which are the thermal sensors on MUPUS, the APX to measure the elemental composition, and hopefully the drill that will finally bring samples to be analyzed by the mass spectrometers. I think I will finish there. Thank you.
And next, Stefan Olimek gave us a description of how we got to where the Philae ended up.
We have a better understanding now how we got there. We still do not really know where. So yesterday I said we probably landed twice. It's already been announced. We landed three times, so there is an inflation of landing somehow. The first rebounds, and this we analyzed now in a bit more detail by using the data of the time of the jump, which we know by looking basically into ROMAP data from the magnetic field. We have a clear signal when we touched ground and when we stopped there, also from the thermal mapper. As well as from the data we have from the landing gear itself, which the first time was pushed in due to the first impact. So now we know the first jump was, as announced also yesterday, about 2 hours, 1 hour and 50. We assume we came in with about 1 meter per second, and then we rebounded with about 38 centimeter per second. Had a 2 hours jump. Probably up to 1 kilometer, probably also around 1 kilometer distance, and this makes it difficult to find out where we are now. We know very well where we touched down the first time. It was a huge leap. And then we had another very small jump of about 3 centimeters per second for a few minutes, for 7 minutes. And now we are in the configuration, as you've seen in the images here, and I cannot really tell you much more than what you interpret yourself by looking at these wonderful images of Shiva and think about what could this actually mean, what could this mean where we are landed. Now, I have one picture, I hope it has been uploaded, which shows you the result of this first analysis by CONCERT, the radar instrument, and I don't know if Mark has uploaded it. Just a second. Okay. Well, radar tomographer, the CONCERT instrument, was designed to scan through the cometary nucleus and get information on the internal structure. Now, this information and this measurement was done tonight, was also used for reconstructing where we are by assuming a certain dielectric property of the comet. And you still don't see this image. Coming, good, good, so I keep talking. Was used to give us an estimate where we probably are sitting. And the interesting thing is we did a lengthy landing site selection process. We were not sure about landing site J or I or B. Maybe we landed on all three of them. Because I keep talking. It's coming from the comment. Yeah, it's 28 minutes. So I have to keep talking for 28 minutes. We made, as I said, quite a leap, about 1 kilometer. Well, in the meantime, while we are waiting for this, some other status report, because yesterday evening it was, of course, not clear whether we would get signal from the lander again. And, of course, you all know this right now because we've presented here the nice images. But very accurately, at the time we hoped to get signal, we received radio link from the lander again this morning. It started again with a few interruptions, and then we had for several hours a perfect link until we lost signal again this afternoon because the orbiter is below the horizon again. So we are currently in a mode where some of the instruments are operating again, which do not need mechanical activations. So this is SESAM is running, ROMAP is running again. From MUPUS, the thermal mapper is running again. And this evening, hopefully around 7:22 UTC, we should reestablish link, and then we will upload the newest science sequence, the newest sequence we want to operate on the comet. This is currently iterated and discussed. Since we do not really know how we are landed, since we are not anchored, but somehow just with the weight of the lander, we need to be very careful about activating mechanisms, but there is some tendency to deploy MUPUs. This is the pen instrument and also the APX in the coming AOS. AOS means the time when we have to link. So the 28 minutes to get the picture are almost over. There it is, yes. Okay. So here you see, you saw the other picture. This is the big crater on the head of the comet. This is the nominal landing site, and we hit this quite accurately within less than 100 meters from the really predicted point. This is known. And then we did this huge jump, something like this. And the concert data imply that, and it's a bit depending on what dielectric properties you assume, somewhere in this area. So we are somewhere in this area. And just to remind you, this was landing site B within the crater. Here was landing site J. So I was joking, we're somehow jumping from one pre-selected landing site to the other one. But we are somewhere here, and it could also well be that we are somewhere in the rim of this crater, which maybe could explain this kind of bizarre or not so obvious orientation you've seen. That's what I wanted to tell you today. Thank you.
Where today's community news makes conversation, the Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
Bezetta, now it's time to rise. It's your time to shine and come back to life. So wake up, sleeping satellite. Wake up, Rosetta.
This is Southern FM, and we are covering the landing of the comet. Now, we're going back to the event and the briefing about the status of Philae and what's happened to it. And we're going to hear from Koen Goertz again.
Koen, I mean, you had a really nerve-wracking night behind you. After landing, it seemed that really the work started to, you know, get into a field where everything was unexpected. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of what happened through the night on your end and also a status of Philae? Thanks a lot.
Yes, so after our first touchdown signal yesterday here at the LCC, we saw immediately that something was not nominal because our system data was indicating that the lander was still moving. And this could only indicate that we're not standing on the comet's surface in a solid way. So we were monitoring this because fortunately the communication link between Rosetta and Philae remained intact also after the touchdown. And we continuously saw that the lander kept rotating. We observed this for about 2 hours when we saw a change in this, and we saw that the rotation stopped. For us, this was a very good signal because the rotation could only stop by touching the comet again. So for us, this was a clear indication that we're at the comet. In these 2 hours, we were talking with all the scientific instruments that were measuring during these 2 hours in order to understand what was actually happening with the lander, in what kind of way we were rotating. And they could quite quickly confirm that we were in a position that was not dramatically different from what we would want to be. Of course, in 2 hours, we could not know where we have landed. But because of the communication between Philae and Rosetta, we kept receiving data. So this was all a positive sign. About 30 minutes after, let's say, the final touchdown, we lost the communication link with Rosetta. But the experts that were here with us looking into the communication could tell us that this was a normal end of the communication. So Philae was disappearing at the end of the horizon. And this gave us good indications that around a comet rotation later, we would get a communication link back. And this is what happened this morning. So we were very eager to get the communication link back this morning, and we started to receive the scientific data that was generated overnight. So we have the concert sounding science data coming in. We have a Rolls Cook image that Stefano will probably talk about after me. So the science measurements were conducted normally. We can say that the lander, from a system point of view, is operating normally. What we need to understand now is what does this position mean for us. You saw in the presentation of Jean-Pierre earlier that we're not standing, let's say, parallel to the surface. So what we're doing now is we're seeing how we can modify the planned nominal operations to cope with this non-nominal position that we're in. And we're at the moment, that's why I came a bit late, we are preparing the commands to be uplinked in the next few hours so that we can start with the next scientific measurements.
The point is a little bit also before we go to Stefano Mottola to see some other images of Rolis. The point is a little bit if you are in a position where there is, let's say, not as much light as we would like to have to be there, what does this mean for the next days or for the next weeks?
Of course, the lander is relying on solar energy to operate over an extended period of time. We have a primary and a secondary battery that we're using now. We see that we get less solar power than we planned for at the nominal landing site. We're receiving about 1.5 hours of sunlight with respect to the 6 or 7 that we were aiming for. This, of course, has an impact on our energy budget and our capabilities to conduct science for an extended period of time afterwards. We are calculating now what this means for the near future. So at the moment, I cannot say much, but unfortunately, this is not the situation that we were hoping for.
And again, congratulations for the fabulous job you've been doing so far. I mean, everybody is just thrilled by the images, thanks to your work that have been coming down. Of course, also thanks to the work of Jean-Pierre. I mean, great job. Thanks a lot.
Your voice in the community. The Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne. 88.3 Southern FM.
Rosetta, now it's time to rise. It's your time to shine and come back to life. So wake up, sleeping satellite. Wake up, Rosetta.
Well, it might well be wake up Philae now, because Philae, its batteries are run out and it's now dormant, and we don't know whether we'll ever get it back again. Perhaps we will, perhaps we won't. Who knows? Well, we're covering the event of landing Philae on comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko, and at one of the briefings, the press were allowed to ask some questions, and we're going to now play you some of those questions. The first one is about the geology of the comet.
Hi, Eric Hamm with Science Magazine. I was hoping to ask a question, I guess maybe for Jean-Pierre or maybe Holger, a geology question. We're getting slightly conflicting information. We were told upon landing that we landed in very soft stuff. And, you know, we see from the Rolis picture, you know, this very soft stuff with mobilized dust right in the middle of Site J. But then we see these Shiva pictures, maybe near a cliff wall, and things that really do look like rocks. So I was hoping one of you could explain what these materials are and how they can be explained by being made by comet processes. Thanks.
Okay, what you are asking for is to try to be ahead, 1 year ahead of us, because we make this mission essentially to answer the question you're asking now. So it's normal that we don't have the answers, and probably the answer would demonstrate that the question is not really well formulated. When you say a cliff, for example, it has some resonance in our head that the cliff is terrestrial sort of cliff analog. We don't think that we're that sort of cliff because the material is very low density anywhere. The density is less than 0.5 globally. So the idea of having a very porous material at the very top came from that, to the idea that there is no reason to believe that the crust is really a strong crust as we thought in the past on a very low density material there. So that's why we thought that finally with the first images we had, plus the COSIMA measurement showing that the floating grains were very fluffy, very porous, that we might have that when we landed. We are not saying that actually it's not the case. It might still be the case. You might still have some really fluffy powder out of which you were after rebouncing. Again, the ejection velocity is very low there. So I would not be more accurate that what we have found does not demonstrate that we don't have a crust. It does not demonstrate that it's a crust. Are you satisfied?
Thank you.
So I'm really happy with you. I'm not satisfied.
One word. So I would follow you on that thought that the rebounds of the lander is an indication of a higher strength material that was a surprise to us. So with this picture of dust falling back to the surface, building high porosity layers, I would think we fail to explain the rebounds. So, but we have seen a variety of surfaces there, this snow field, soft stuff, and we have seen this rocky-like, but no rock stuff, which is perhaps a higher strength material. We also see stuff shining through a dust layer, where the dust is wiped away or following the gravity field and exposing a higher strength material. And this is something that we could consider be the reason for the rebound. So bounce in there, find a higher strength material, and then get going for the next landing.
Thank you. David Shukman, BBC News. You've ended up in a very awkward spot. Is it possible to get out of it?
We just need another jump. Well, in this context, I should maybe mention a person who hasn't been mentioned very often today, but should be, and this is Helmut Rosenbauer, who is the father of the Philae, the idea, Max Planck director, in the whole development phase. And he is also somehow the father of this landing gear. And he put in a lot of ideas and thought. And when we designed the lander, indeed, it was his plan to make the lander in a way it could hop by extending the landing gear again and make a hop somehow like we did it without really wanting to do this right now. So we could, in principle, operate this landing gear. But in the position we are now, which is very unclear, with one leg maybe somewhere in the, not the air, in the vacuum, a position we do not know, we wouldn't dare to operate this right now before we know where we are and what would an activation of this landing gear really mean. So I'm not so sure we would have enough time, given the limited power we generate with the solar generator, to do this analysis, really to do a dedicated jump out of the hole where we might be or away from this wall. So there is some principal possibility, but it would be very, very difficult.
Hello, it's Chris Lintott from BBC Sky at Night. I'm interested in what the instruments on board knew while they were bouncing around. Did they think they were on the surface and execute the science package, or would they have gone into some safe mode or reacted to the fact that the Philae was moving?
The touchdown signal was generated at the first touchdown, and this switched the lander from the mode of descent into the mode of what to operate after touchdown. So after this touchdown signal, the instruments thought, as you want to say, that they were on the ground, and the sequence started as it would have started on ground. But these measurements could then, of course, be used to interpret and to learn that we were not on ground, but actually jumping, like I mentioned the data from the magnetometer, which clearly indicated this and coming back, and also the infrared monitor quite clearly, as we understand it right now, showed us when we were not properly standing on the surface, but doing something strange, because they had the comet in the field of view, and then not, and then they had it, so that they measured this. And in principle, after this touchdown, our first scientific sequence with the first block started as if we would have been on the surface, safely anchored.
Well, let's hear some more music from Vangelis, that arrival music, and we'll leave you with Nick Black in about a minute and a half's time. Meanwhile, here's Vangelis, arrival, specially composed for the mission.